Welcome to the Professional Magician Podcast. Discover ways to book more shows at higher fees from a guy who's been doing it for over 20 years. Here's Chris Johnson.
Five ways to expand your magic business and increase your income. That plus a review of Pro Diminishing Cards by Trevor Duffy. I'm your host, Chris Johnson. Thanks for joining me here today. I have been debating about doing an episode like this for quite some time. I wasn't sure how many people would be interested in it. Many of the magicians I run into, whether they're full-time, part-time, or just getting into the business, they're perfectly happy doing what they do, which is magic shows, which is great. As I get older and I get crankier and I like to travel less, I've been looking at ways of expanding my income. As many of you know, I'm basically splitting my time now between performing and doing copywriting slash digital marketing for magicians, building websites and all kinds of great things. But I wanted to do an episode based on some of the ideas that I've had over the years about increasing your income in your magic business, some ways of expanding beyond magic and so forth. I was inspired to do this episode by Anthony Linden, my guest from, I'm trying to remember how long ago, it was at least a year ago. I have to have him back on again sometime. Anthony is just wonderful. He's a creative thinker, and I'm so glad. Go ahead, quick pitch. Anthony's going to be traveling to Kadabra to present this year, so if you've not made your plans to go to Kadabra yet, I'll be there presenting this year. I've got two presentations, and Anthony Linden will be presenting at Kadabra for the first time, and he's just a fountain of creativity, so I'm really looking forward to seeing what he's got to say and catching up with him, too. So let's get into a few different things that you can do to increase your income in your magic business and even expand beyond your magic business. Now, I want to be clear that these are not the only things, obviously. It's just a few ideas to get your thoughts around the idea of making money above and beyond your magic. The first and the most obvious are add-ons to your actual shows, things that you're already doing now. For kids entertainers, the easiest one that many magicians do is balloon animals. I know some magicians hate balloon animals. I'm not really quite sure why. Well, I kind of know why, because when I do balloon animals after a birthday party, first of all, I don't do a lot of birthday parties. Second of all, when I do, there's always that kid who bashes his balloon into the wall and breaks it and has a meltdown and has to get a new one right away. It's usually a couple of kids like that, and it's just right around the time where I'm finishing. I'm trying to pack up and get out of there. So that is a little bit frustrating and stuff, but honestly, kids are fascinated by balloons, so are adults. I've lost count of how many birthday parties I've done over the years where the kids are watching the show, we're having a good time, the adults are off talking, in the adjacent room or in the room, and it's hard to focus the kids' attention because the adults are talking. But when I start doing the balloons, everybody focuses on me. They're just fascinated by the idea of making balloon animals because people think that the balloons are easy to pop. And those of you who make balloon animals, you know that they're not so easy to pop. You have to abuse them quite a bit to get them to pop. So that's my first idea for an add-on, is try balloon animals. Now, I think another reason why people shy away from it is because they think they have to get all fancy. And truthfully, if you're working at a fair and things like that, people do expect, slightly fancier balloon animals. But for a birthday party, here's all I do. I do a dog, a wiener dog, a sword, a giraffe, a rabbit, and a mouse. That's it. And honestly, they're all variations of dog, except for the sword. Even the balloon, even the rabbit is a variation on a dog with a couple of changes. They're all very easy to make. I think it's a giraffe, too. Giraffe's another one, too. And then giraffe is totally just a variation on a dog. They're really easy to learn how to make. I learned mine out of a book that came with a pump and some balloons 25 years ago. And I've been making those same balloon animals ever since. When I do a balloon workshop, which I'll talk about later, I do a few other animals. I make like a jetpack. I make a crazy hat and a few other things. But honestly, my repertoire is really simple, and the kids are happy with that. I get the occasional kid who wants a shark or a bicycle or something, but honestly, kids are just happy having a balloon animal. So consider adding balloon animals to your show. It's a great add-on, and it's an easy way to make more money. And it fills up more time, too. And many birthday parties, for whether right or wrong, many birthday party parents, for them, it's all about the time. A second thing you can add on to your birthday parties are goodie bags. That's a standard thing that magicians have been doing for like 20, 30 years. Stick a fortune-telling fish in there with your business card inside, a sticker on the outside, load it up with some candy, maybe a finger trap, a plastic frog, and you're ready to go. I mean, it's not that hard to do. You have to keep your inventory, of course. So what I do when I do birthday parties anymore is I don't want to worry about inventory, so I give them a copy of a magic book. I got the template for this magic book about 20 years ago from CJ Johnson. I can't remember, but look on CJ Johnson's website. I'm sure he's still selling it. It's a ready-made print on your own demand kind of thing. It teaches kids how to do 62 magic tricks. All you have to do is add your contact information and then give it a cover with your name on it, and it's an instant book. And right before the pandemic hit, I ordered like 1,000 of them from Sammy Smith printing. And I still have about a good 500 of them now, again, because I don't do a lot of birthday parties. But you know, if you're in a pinch, you can print up your own. That's how I did it for years and years and years. I just printed up my own and brought them to birthday parties, and would upsell the mom. And then I would also do I'll get into BOR now. So the other place I would sell my magic books is after school shows. I would do like a family fun night or something like that, or if it was like a fundraiser, and I would give a small portion of the proceeds to schools, and I would sell my books after the show. And honestly, these days, I don't do a lot of fundraisers anymore because I just don't want to work at night. I just want to get home. But when I do it and I sell my books, most of the time I come near or break what I made for the show itself. So it's a really easy way to increase your income. And by the way, if you're not familiar with the term, BOR is back of the room sales. Now you don't also, you're not restricted obviously to just using instant author kit like CJ Johnson. You can also write your own book. And during the pandemic, I did just that. I wrote 3 books during the pandemic. The first one I wrote was my science book, and it's called Super Science. You can actually find it on Amazon. You can check it out. And it's a professionally written book. I had an editor and everything, and it's got an ISBN number. So it is a legitimate book. It's just not in bookstores. It's through Amazon. Although I've got the rights to it, I can print up as many copies as I want and sell them if I want to. And I did this because I wanted something for my science shows. During the pandemic, I decided, you know what? When schools come back, I really want to position myself as the go-to guy for science shows. So what I did was I wrote this book, and it turned out really good. I'm really proud of how this book turned out. It explains science in very kid-friendly terms, and I'm just really proud of the book. So my idea was I was going to be the science guy, and I was going to be the guy who had an actual published science book for my credibility. And I haven't pushed it nearly as much as I thought I would, because school shows just kind of came back on their own, and I've, quite honestly, I'm as busy as I want to be. But it is an idea to consider. If you write your own book, as opposed to an instant author kit, you can make it as customized as you want. You can write a fiction book. You can write something nonfiction. Teach kids magic tricks. I went with science because my science show. But I haven't checked it lately. But before the pandemic, my science show was my top seller. So I figured I'd have a book for science. And the other one was a virtual magic show or a virtual magic book that taught kids how to do magic virtually. And then the third book is a book about dog behavior because I just love dogs. Now. BOR, back of the room sales. Like I said, I outlined how I can sell back of the room sales for schools, but you can also offer back of the room sales for individual magic tricks, magic kits, all kinds of things. Just get your client's permission before you offer those tricks and offer those sales. Some libraries will also allow you the same thing, to sell your books and your tricks after the show. I don't know if all, in fact, I know not all libraries will, so you have to check with your librarian first. And here's a tip, you can offer to reduce the size of your fee in exchange for them being willing to let you, sell your stuff. That's an old corporate trick, too. Birthday parties. Like I said, you can sell goodie bags, books. Another thing you can sell to as an add-on is you can do package upsells. I mentioned it briefly with birthday parties and balloon animals, but you can add like a longer show where you float a kid in the air, live animals. I did a whole episode on package selling, so I'm not going to go through that here. But an easy add-on is to simply have different packages in your shows and have more expensive shows that they buy. Corporate, you can absolutely sell, with your client's permission, absolutely sell magic tricks after the fact in the BOR. You can sell books. You can also do CDs. If you're a hypnotist, oh boy, for a very short time, I didn't do it very long because I just didn't feel comfortable doing it for reasons I'm not going to get into now. But if you're a hypnotist, you can sell CDs after a corporate hypnosis show and people will snap them right up. I mean, I made a killing doing that for a while. So that is a little bit about add-ons, and there's plenty of other ideas. I just want to get you jump-started thinking about this stuff. So other services, in addition to offering your magic shows, you can offer your library clients and even some of your birthday party clients balloon workshops. The Kids Entertainer Academy had an entire outline of how to do balloon workshops, and that's pretty much the model that I follow. It's super simple. You teach kids how to make, in this order, how to make a mystery object, how to make a balloon dog, and how to make a sword. And then you give them about 20 minutes of free time to make crazy hats and all kinds of goofy things. And you start off with like a 15-minute magic show to kind of focus their attention. Then there's other things you can do too. You can offer magic workshops. Magic workshops are a lot of fun. I typically just offer a one-hour workshop where I teach the kids how to do 6 or 7 tricks, and that's a lot of fun. And it's and I do it. And I got the model from forgetting exactly who it was, and I apologize, but I've kind of evolved the concept of the magic workshop over the years to now what I teach is the 3-card Monte trick, the one of the flap, 2-card Monte. I give the kids a fortune-telling fish to give them something super easy that they can do. I teach them how to do a mind-reading trick with a crayon, a couple of rubber band tricks, and what else am I? I know I'm missing at least one. But anyway, a second mind-reading trick you can do with a helper. And I usually get the teacher or the librarian involved to help me with this, and that goes over really well. So it's a really simple class. Oh, and I know I teach them how to throw an invisible ball into a bag and actually have it land and hear the sound and everything. It's pretty standard stuff, but the benefit of my workshop, and if I think of the name, I'll put the link in the show notes of the gentleman who I bought this from and taught it. In fact, I'm going to look it up right now. Okay, I found it. It's Tommy Johns. He's a great guy, offers some great products, so check out his course. You can look him up on Facebook. I don't have his website handy right now, but Tommy Johns teaches a fantastic, about a one-hour workshop. So those are a lot of fun, too. I really enjoy those. The other option for other services that I want to mention is Discover Magic. That's a depending on how you do it, like an 8-week class. And I know some people are making a killing using Discover Magic. And I've got an entire episode devoted to Discover Magic coming up with my good friend, Brian Scott. It's going to be a really fun episode. So that's a little bit about other services. And obviously there's a ton of other things I'm not mentioning here. Like I said, just in the interest of keeping this episode manageable, but you can also explore other markets. That's the third way you can expand your magic business. So many of us get started doing birthday parties. They're the easiest one to get into. They're not the easiest ones to perform. I have all the deepest love and respect for birthday party performers. Because I was one for many years. They're not the easiest, but boy, they're the easiest ones to get into, really. And from there, you can, once you've got your skills updated, from there you can get into preschools. And then, same thing, preschools are relatively easy to book, and they're a lot of fun. They really are. Do not look at these shows as mere stepping stones. They can be a career in their own right. I know a lot of people, Dave Risley, for example, made an entire career primarily out of performing preschools, and they're wonderful. Then you can consider libraries. I'm talking about kids show markets. So you can consider libraries. Libraries are a little bit tougher to book, and usually they want theme shows, but they can be a lot of fun and a great source of income. And the best thing about libraries is that they are very loyal clients typically. I've been servicing some of the same library clients for over 10 years. It's not always the case, but many times library clients are super loyal. You can also consider schools, elementary schools like I do, or middle schools or high schools, depending on your preferences. Schools, you absolutely have to have an educational show. You absolutely have to have an educational show to work the school market consistently. And I'm going to be presenting 23 steps to performing a school assembly. What did we call it? I just had a meeting with Mark Daniel last week, and he's brilliant at coming up with names. I think it's just school assembly success with dollar signs and for the S's. And the subhead, what is this? I've got the subhead right here. The subhead is going to be 23 steps to a career in to a six-figure career in school shows. Going to be a really fun lecture. I'm going to do that in Kadabra this year. It is going to be different from anything I've posted on the podcast. Obviously, it's going to be a lot different. Then after schools, there are fundraisers, which are kind of like an adjacent to schools, because many schools will have a nighttime fundraisers. They'll also have family night fun nights. So those are a few different other markets you can explore if you're a kid show performer. If you're an adult performer, there's obviously, you know, the adult birthday parties and things like that. There's also holiday parties. That's probably, in my estimation, probably the easiest market to break into is holiday parties for corporate groups. You can get into banquets throughout the year. You can get into customer appreciation events where they'll have like these big events to show their customers how much they appreciate and then bring in, you know, like a big spread of food and entertainment and all kinds of fun stuff. Hospitality suites, that's great for the close-up market, close-up performers. And if you do an educational show, like a keynote or something like that, like a motivational speech or like a success seminar or anything like that, you can do back-of-the-room sales after that and sell your course and your CD. Well, I don't know about CDs anymore, but I would probably just put, if I was going into the corporate market, and I haven't, I'd have to find out what they prefer, their information, but I would either stick with written material or I'll probably put it all on a thumb drive. But again, I'd have to look more into the corporate market to discover what BOR preferences are now for the people who are purchasing them. Keynotes, I mentioned a moment ago, you can do keynotes, you can do breakout sessions. Keynotes are like when you're in front of the entire group and you're there as like a kickoff for the event. Breakouts are usually shorter, well, sometimes longer shows you're doing, or not shows, but workshops you're doing throughout the day for smaller groups, and they can workshops. I've done keynotes on breakout or on memory and stress management, all kinds of fun things. It really allows you to perform for a different manner. I cannot tell you how much fun educational shows are. Trade shows, that's another one. That's the mecca, the big white whale that everybody chases when they're a corporate group. I personally don't like trade shows. I find them very tedious and difficult, and you're on your feet for 8-10 hours a day. But the money can be very good. So, you know, something else to consider. And then we can get into... and by the way, let me back up a second. With trade shows, you absolutely have to customize what you're offering. People are not going to pay you big bucks to do trade shows just to sit down and do your standard magic tricks. You have to have some kind of a plug, some kind of a sales message woven throughout your trade show presentation. And you often have to build your own crowd too, typically. So that's can be very challenging, very challenging. But like I said, you know, last I heard, if you get into trade shows, the money can be very, very good. But you work for it. You really do. None of these markets are easy, from birthday parties to corporate trade shows to school shows to everything in between. None of these markets are easy. I don't want to give off the impression I'm just giving off different options. So number four is expanding into, if you're an adult performer, expanding into other markets within the corporate / adult field. And number five is going beyond magic completely. I am getting into this year foam parties. I just dropped my first batch of postcards in the mail a couple of days ago. Got my Google Ads going on. I have to start doing some Facebook ads for that. But foam parties, if you didn't listen to my interview with Christopher Weed, foam parties are really a lot of fun. Let me explain what they're about. With foam parties, you bring this large cannon to an event, and plug it in and tie it into the client's water source, and you have this bucket of solution that you add water to, and you basically turn on the cannon, and it sucks water up through your water source along with this foam solution, and shoots out foam into the driveway or yard or what have you, where kids are going to run through it and jump and play and have a great time. It's think of the foam in a bubble bath, how that looks, and then consider that covering the size of a driveway or half a tennis court. That's what a foam party is. And a lot of my fellow school show performers, a lot of my buddies have gotten into foam. They got into foam during the pandemic because it was a great way to have no contact, entertainment that was no contact. So, and I know some people who are making literally $200,000 a year doing phone parties. Now, the thing with that is, if you're going to do it, because it's just like anything else, you have to have somebody to show up, do the gig. It's like it's a gig like anything else. But the advantage with phone parties, as it is, has been explained to me, is that you can have other people working for you. So instead of just going out with your cannon, your foam cannon, and doing shows, you can, I know, I'm not going to say who, but I know some people have got as many as 8 cannons, so they're able to serve as 8 birthday parties in one day if they fill it up, you know, that kind of thing. The challenge with that though is having, you know, that many events being serviced is you have to have really dependable employees. And for a lot of the nation, foam parties are not a full-time, you know, year-round gig. So you're looking for people who are going to be loyal to you and do a good job for you for only, depending on where you're located, only a few months at a time. Like for me, I don't think we're going to be able to have foam parties until like May. I'm laying the groundwork now, of course, but I don't think I'm going to be able to actually do any of these parties until May. And then they're probably going to wrap up like around September, I would guess. So, but it is a possibility. I've spoken to Christopher Weed, and I've talked to a lot of other people about it, and the earning potential is just astronomical. I mean, it really is. If you're willing to do the work and have employees and deal with that kind of thing. The next thing you can consider is you can have offer services to other entertainers. Like if you're a good graphic designer, you can offer graphic design services. If you're adept at producing magic tricks, if you're a good builder, like my friend Tommy James, like my friend Jim Cleefield, like my friend Peter Lochran, and many others, if you're good at building tricks, you can sell magic tricks to other magicians. That's another income stream we're talking about here. And again, I'll go back to Discover Magic for a second. I know a lot of people who are doing Discover Magic, and they're not just serving, because it's like anything else. It takes up your time. You have to go for an 8-week class. You have to go to the location 8 times and teach these classes. So I know a lot of people who are using Discover Magic, and they're hiring magicians who are doing things part-time, or maybe they don't want to be full-time, or they're just looking to fill in some gaps in their schedule. They'll hire other magicians, or they'll hire some people and train them how to do the classes, so they can have theoretically 8 classes going on at a time, that sort of thing. So Discover Magic is another great way. And like I said, when I have Brian Scott on, in fact, you know what, he's going to be on next week. I've got the interview. I'm just going to launch it next week. That's so you can look forward to that. It's going to be all about Discover Magic from somebody who really does it well, and he's a great guy too and a good friend. Now, the other idea that I had and I've toyed with this off and on for years, it's kind of controversial, and I'll address some of the controversy around it and why you may or may not want to do this, but you can start an entertainment agency. There's a lot of different entertainment agencies out there, and depending where you are on the pay scale and in terms of your career, you might look at agents as, a great thing. Like I know one guy who a lot of his school assembly performing career is he's hanging his hat on one particular agent, and they give him a lot of work all over the country. Other people can't stand agents. They think, I'm doing all the work. Why should they get all the money and everything? I have a different slant. If I find a good agent, and I've had a couple over the years, I've broken free from most of them I'll get into details. The first agent I had, I was in Pittsburgh, and the pay wasn't very good, but it wasn't bad. And quite honestly, back then I didn't deserve really high pay. She was really nice. She'd call me up and say, I have this potential gig for you. What do you think? And she'd discuss it with me before she pitched it to the client. And she was really nice. And she was just, she had a balloon business, selling balloons and wedding favors and things like that. And she would periodically get these requests for entertainment. We crossed paths because my girlfriend at the time, her mother knew this lady. They were friends. So that's how I got hooked up with her, and it introduced me to the world of agents. This is great. I just get a phone call, details about the gig, go do the gig, and I get paid, and it was great. Now, when I moved from Pittsburgh to Niagara Falls, I hooked up with a couple more agents, and they were a little bit on the sketchy side where, I couldn't always trust what they had to say. The pay was really low, but again, it helped me get my feet wet in a brand new area. And then a number of years later, after I'd been a hypnotist for a number of years, an agent approached me directly. She was looking for more agents to fill some need in the states, Iowa and Nebraska, where she booked a lot of her gigs. And she found me online and reached out to me directly, and we had like a long conversation. She was really doing a good job vetting me, which is fine. I mean, I answered all her questions properly and that sort of thing. And I worked with her for a number of years, and I was getting, you know, $1,200, $1,400, eventually $1,800 a gig from her. The challenge of it, though, was it did not include flight. So, you know, $1,400 sounds really good, but I had to pay for my flight out of that. So by the end of it, I wasn't making all that much money unless she got me two or three gigs in one weekend. In that case, it was really good. But I got tired of flying the gigs. I got tired of dealing with flights and late night gigs and everything. That's where I got a lot of my post-prom grad parties, by the way. So eventually I just raised my price to $1,850, and she's like, most of my clients aren't going to pay that. I said, I understand. I can't stand doing the flying anymore. So I deliberately priced myself out with her. But it was a great relationship. It was a really good relationship. She knew how to, we had a couple of disagreements, but for the most part, she knew how to run things really well. And I enjoyed my relationship with her tremendously. So if you're going to be an agent, you've got to vet your performers. We've all heard horror stories about Philip and Henry. I've had Philip and Henry call me up and want me to do a gig, and they offer me like $30, and the gig's like 2 hours away. I'm like, are you out of your freaking minds? And I've had a few other agents too that I've cut ties with. They're just trying to really lowball me. So if you're going to get into the agency game, give your clients. My recommendation is to give your charges, the people you're representing, what they want for your, you know, be transparent with them. You know, tell them, what would you charge for this gig? And because there's, you know, there's a lot of big disagreements about agencies and prices and everything. And some agents are having trouble making money because they're charging so much. So My recommendation, if you're going to start an agency, first of all, vet all your entertainers, you know, see video and just really vet them. Make sure you're hooking up with good quality people. Then, have an open, honest discussion about fees. You know, ask them, what do you want to make for your gig? And then once you find out what they want to make, you can either do one of two things. You can either add your agency fee on top of it when you talk to the client, or you can take your agency fee out of the client or out of the performer's total check. So I've been at the end of it either, you know, both ways. Both have their strong points and their their low points. And yeah, the agency thing is a really big deal. And my good friend Tim Picciarello, years and years ago, he put out a course about starting an agency. And maybe I'll get him back in the podcast, and him and I can talk about it, see if we can offer that course again, because it was really good. We produced it together, and he has some really good information, because he was an agent for many, many years. He booked a lot of big acts. In fact, I think, and I could be speaking out of turn here, but I think back in the day, I think he even booked Bill Cosby. So, you know, he's booked some big names. So maybe I'll have him. So anyway, maybe I'll have him back in the podcast. But my point of all of this is just giving you some ideas, some additional thoughts to think about to expand beyond the reach of your performing. Because as sooner or later, you're going to age out. And if you're like me, you're not going to want to perform as much. And then you've got to, you know, make up that income in other ways. You know, I chose copywriting and digital marketing. And there's a lot of other ideas out there that you can consider making more money with your magic while pulling back and performing if and when you desire. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the podcast. Now let's get on to this week's episode of Trick Talk.
It's time for Trick Talk. Honest, detailed reviews of magic tricks, equipment, and other fun stuff to make your show the best it can be.
Okay, let's get into this week's episode of Trick Talk. This is a fun one. This is one I recently got, and it's not too terribly expensive. Some of my newsletter subscribers have said that the tricks that I review are just too stinking expensive, but that's what I buy. Other than one review I'll be doing very soon for Michael Ross, I just got, oh God, it's so good. I just got Michael Ross's salt pour gimmick for a review copy of his salt pour gimmick, which is fantastic. But other than that, I never get review copies, so when I do reviews, this for things that I buy with the hopes of putting them into my show. I don't buy tricks just to do reviews. I don't want to waste that much money. But this is one I recently bought. I had been curious about this trick for years and years. I'd heard about it. I'd never actually seen it performed. And then I went to Kadabra last year, and Christopher T. Magician performed the diminishing cards. And it was really cute. I mean, I'd never seen it before, and I fell in love with it instantly. What a cute trick. So I been pondering it for a little while, and all of a sudden, God, I wish this happened more often. All of a sudden, bang, I was hit with inspiration. Like, here's a way to put this trick into one of my educational shows as kind of like a recap of everything that happened prior to the show to remind the kids, you know, after the big trick is over. In my case, I float one of the kids in the air at the end of this particular theme show. And this would be a great way to remind the kids of certain key points of my show as like a recap at the end of the performance. And the whole script kind of like hit me bang. Just like I had the script written in like 5 seconds. I mean, it's like I've never had anything fall together this quickly before. It's really, really cool. I can't wait to try it out. I'm going to read the ad copy. It's short. This is Trevor Duffy's Pro Diminishing Cards. Tried and tested by Trevor Duffy for over 30 years, this method of diminishing cards has always been a favorite for kids and family audiences. Made to the highest standards for the professional performer, this product has been designed for ease of use and optimum efficiency. Five sizes, a genuine cardstock, removable cards to display, card display stand and handy storage case included, easy handling, and online instructions. Now, that doesn't explain what the trick is. That's kind of funny. Basically, the trick is you show a fan of cards, you squeeze it, and all of a sudden the fan of cards has reduced itself by half. And then you can actually even remove one of those cards to show that it's actually cards. And then you do this again 3 more times. So you've got like 4 reductions in size until they're like these itty bitty little teeny tiny things, like this fan of cards that's like roughly a centimeter wide. I mean, it's adorable. It's really cute. And that's it. I mean, there's no there's no fancy sleight of hand or anything. But let me get into the review itself. First of all, I'll go into like the quality of the gimmicks. I love the fact that he included a plastic carrying case to travel with the cards so that your props don't get damaged. And quite honestly, some of these cards are so itty bitty. I may have exaggerated. I said it like a centimeter across, but it's not much bigger than that, the smallest size. But I like the fact that there's a a case to travel with the props to keep everything safe and secure. I love the fact that there is a display included, a little stand included, so you can show the cards, you know, single examples of these cards stepping down in size every time you do a reduction in size. I love his easy handling. He did the he filmed himself at a show. He said it was a school show, and I got excited. I thought it was a school assembly. I think it was a preschool, which is fine. I think the kids were just a little bit on the young side to really appreciate the tricks. I kept talking throughout the routine, but he did a wonderful job, and it's really an adorable trick. The trick is the classic handling. You show a fan of cards. Every time you squeeze them, they reduce in size. I'm repeating myself because not much more to say about it. It's just such a... It looks incredibly fair. I'll say it like that. Angles, you don't want anybody behind you, but you could easily do this surrounded 3 sides. So the angles are very good. And even with a little bit of extra handling tips, you could probably do this surrounded too. But again, if you're doing shows surrounded, you're in hell. Okay, ease of use. I mean, I got this down. I'm going to give it like a 2. There's no fancy sleight of hand, but there is quite a bit of choreography. First, you have to do this, then you have to do that. And that's needed simply because you're working with gimmick cards. You've got to do things in the right order, and that's fine. So on a scale of 1 to 10 from difficulty, I'll say like a 2. There's no difficult slights. It's just a matter of remembering what to do when, which way to pivot your body and that kind of stuff too. Very simple to do. Everything's well made, which I really appreciate. I mean, this is made for the professional performer. I actually got 2 when I bought them because I knew I was going to need 2 because the reset takes a couple of minutes. And honestly, again, if you're like really stressed out and trying to reset in under a minute, you got another crowd of people coming in, it's going to be really easy in your haste to knock one of those gimmick cards off your table and lose it or get stepped on or what have you. So I do a lot of back-to-back shows. I may have like a 9 o'clock assembly and a 10 o'clock assembly, for example. So I got two sets of these so that I don't have to worry about resetting between shows, which makes my life a lot easier. And I consider that for you too. I mean, these are so inexpensive. If you're doing back-to-back shows, get a couple of sets so they don't have to worry about resetting. Like I said, resetting takes maybe, I think he said like about a minute. I've just started practicing with it. I can reset now in like 2 minutes because I'm trying to be overly careful. 2 minutes is not a lot of time, but again, I've done a lot of shows where as soon as the first group of kids leaves, the second group is there, and I'm like, I'm trying to scramble, get everything ready. So get yourself, my recommendation is get yourself multiple sets just so that you're prepared. What else can I say about this? This gets a 10. I mean, this is a. I haven't seen a ton of pro diminishing cards, and I was debating between this one and the one from Collector's Magic because I got it in a newsletter. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. I almost got the Collector's Magic one, but I got this one from Trevor Duffy because, first of all, there's a video of him actually performing in front of kids, and second of all, it's a worker. And the third reason why I went with his over Collector's Magic is it included the stand, so you could display the removable cards. I don't know if Collector's Magic has removable cards or a stand with it. It doesn't say that it does in the ad copy, so I went with this one. But I really enjoy it. I think if you're a kids performer and you're interested in this plot, I like this. What I like about this is that it's got multiple. It's got multiple moments of magic. I mean, as much as I love things like Kevin James' bowling ball trick, or bowling ball out of briefcase, or I'm trying to think of an example. Even my one of my favorite tricks, which is Miss Made Bill. I mean, you talk about like one moment of magic. This has got several moments of magic where the cards shrink in size four times, and at the end they disappear. I mean, that's five moments of magic, and it's really cool. It's really easy to do. It's really visual. You don't have to have a lot of exposition to explain what the heck you're going to show the audience. You just do it, and they'll get it. This gets my highest recommendation, 10 out of 10. I'll try to remember to post an update when I actually start doing this thing for live audiences. Usually I don't post a review for something unless I've done it for audiences. But this one, I mean, it's Trevor Duffy. He's been doing it for 30 years. The handling is so easy and so clearly designed for the working professional. This whole set was clearly designed for the working professional. I think I can safely give this a kick-ass review, even if I haven't performed it yet. So, yeah, I love this. I think this is really fantastic and really cool. And if it interests you, I do recommend it. It's available at different dealers. I happen to use Penguin Magic. So they're just my preferred dealer these days. But consider this. The information will be in the show notes. And give it a shot. You'll be able to see some highlights from his performance on the website, and you can judge for yourself. But I think this is a winner. So that's this week's episode of the Professional Magician Podcast. I do want to thank you for joining me. And as always, I encourage you to go to my website, theprofessionalmagicianclubpro.com. Again, that's theprofessionalmagicianclubpro.com. Go to the free goodies tab, and on there, I've got six incredible business building things that you can use to make more money and book more shows, and each one of them is free. Just drop in your name, your first name, and your email address. You'll get your free goodie access instantly, and you'll also be able to be subscribed to my weekly newsletter, The Professional Magician Life. This week, I wrote an article all about how to handle protesters, so check that out. And as always, thank you very much for joining me, and I'll see you all next week with my interview with Brian Scott. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to today's show. If you haven't already, subscribe today so you don't miss a single episode. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode of The Professional Magician.